Did you see the stylish kids in the riot? Shoveled up like monks at the night on fire, wombles bleed, truncheons and shields. You know I cherish you, my love.
Welcome to the Young IPA Podcast. I'm James, this is Pete.
G'day everyone.
It is episode 58 and it is Friday the 4th of May, so big day for Star Wars nerds out there. Sorry, we've got a huge show for you guys coming up. We are having back on the Herald Sun columnist, Sky News television host, and, well, my dad, feels weird saying it like that, but them's the facts. Andrew Bolt is going to be on the show, and we're also going to be talking to IPA research fellow Georgina Downer, a bit of budget preview, what's going to be there, and I should point out, like, with Andrew Bolt, we're going to be talking Karl Marx's 200th birthday, what he's got planned for the big occasion, and what he reckons of the whole Kanye West tweeting about Trump.
Big Kanye West fan, Andrew Bolt.
Yeah, still unable to name a single song, but I'll send him a few tasters, which he will then not listen to. But big week, so Pete, we should talk Tuesday. We should talk.
We really have to talk.
Yeah. Your performance has not been up to scratch. But yeah, as joined as always by Nina Lowe and Arthur, pressing the buttons for us.
Hi.
short, sharp, to the point.
Yep.
Says what's there. Classic. Very understanding way. Pete, let's talk budget.
Okay, well, I've cast my eagle eye. Actually, myself and Morgan Begg cast our eagle eye over the budget. And hey, what did I miss yesterday? We came up with a couple of issues, a couple of areas for improvement: spending and taxation.
Yes.
Both steadily increasing, and one is more than the other. So our advice was to lower them both.
Yep.
And have them be the same.
Yeah.
That's what our hopes for the budget are.
And just getting a vibe of the economic policy of this government, I think that'll be introduced.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I'm very optimistic that all of our spending woes will be,
solved come Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. And we definitely just won't have it passed on to the next generation again.
That's right. So budget's on Tuesday.
Well, like, yeah.
You go.
Well, I was going to say, there's a lot of big preview, big feelings about the budget. So Deloitte came out and said it's going to be an absolute rivers of gold. I like this quote. So Deloitte Access Economics has released its final budget monitor before the treasurer hands down the budget. Mm-hmm. And in recent months, we've seen a, quote, humongous improvement in the budget.
Really?
I didn't know humongous was a metric.
They've gone, we need more spice in our menu releases. What does that mean?
The thesaurus. Well, it just means like things are looking up. Like,
really?
They're getting more. Well, I think it was like they are getting more from company tax than they thought they would, which would explain why the company tax cut.
They've gone on a deeper dive than us.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's also like, I'm starting to see why the company tax cut got scrapped, because they're getting so much money from it.
Yep.
But yeah, so unfortunately, like, the company tax is still going to be that high. But yeah, I just like the idea of a humongous improvement.
Yeah, well, that's the takeout from Deloitte.
Yeah.
Johnny Roskin will be on.
Yeah.
Johnny Roskin.
As he's known to his 1930s compatriots. Our executive director, John Roskin, is going to be on Sky News Outsiders on the night. So after the budget wraps up, obviously Sky News is going to have a few panels talking about it. John Roskin is going to be on Outsiders. If you are following us on Facebook, which I hope you are, because I run the Facebook page and helps me out with my job performance, we are going to be going Facebook Live the second the budget speech ends. So we're going to be talking to Simon Breeny in studio, and I think Dan Wild is going to be in the budget lockup in Canberra. He's going to have a few thoughts as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Very exciting night for the IPA on Tuesday night, and hopefully for Australia, but I kind of doubt it. Do you have anything more you want to say about the budget?
No, I gave my analysis first up, and
the world was changed.
That's it.
The world was one way, Pete's budget analysis, and now the world is another way.
That's it. And things are going to be the same. Okay. Scott Morrison's like, oh, jeez,
wait, we haven't got Pete on board. Start again.
Yep, so
from the top, new document. Cool. So, big Saturday is going to be a big day for the world. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about this with Andrew Bolt, so I kind of don't want to go over it too long. But Karl Marx's 200th birthday, big day for the far left. I don't really think it's going to be a big day for most people. But yeah, people are starting to put obituaries or tributes, homages to Karl Marx's influence.
Ooh, fancy.
What?
Homage. Very fancy.
Yeah, I think I watched Hot Fuzz again recently. It's a very funny scene with that word. But yeah, Pete, what do you have planned for the big day?
Well, when is it? Tomorrow?
Saturday. Oh, yeah. Which is tomorrow.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Friday.
I'm
Friday, people.
You beauty.
I'm going to the soccer, but that's not really to do with Marx. No, my thing, there's too much guffawing, right? So, like, because, clearly the economics is wrong, right?
Yes.
Marx's economics is wrong. That's, everyone knows that.
Oh, don't tell the New York Times. But yes.
His thing is like society is all power and oppression.
Mm.
That still animates vast swathes of academia.
Yeah.
And graduates get churned out with that idea. They just apply it to not economics. They just apply
relations
between groups.
Men and women. You know, minorities.
The stuff we talk about everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. So you're not going to be celebrating it too much.
I think there's too much guffawing.
Guffawing.
Because like he won. Marx won.
He does not like guffawing.
Marx won. He won. He didn't win, but you know.
I think he lost pretty significantly. The influence is still there.
He still influences.
Yeah, yeah. I think they had it their heyday. Now that the 90s have gone.
Well, yeah. And you can say, so the economics choked on its own vomit. Maybe the cultural interpretation.
They're still going well.
Yeah, but I mean, eventually it will. That's my overall line.
It's starting to eat itself. We're going to be talking about that with Andrew Bolt. We found a few articles of some pretty outright guffawing. So we're going to get his view on stuff in the New York Times and some stuff from one of Pope Francis's closest advisors, which is pretty fun. Well, let's check in with one country that has kind of been trying to adopt the Marxist principles, Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
This story came out this week. Someone was given severance pay. Like, they've been working there for 5 years. They were fired. Severance pay, obviously. There's not a whole lot of jobs going in Venezuela at the moment, so a lot of people are getting severance pay. She had a look. It was worth 20 cents. Like, just on the rate of inflation, like, the severance pay was tied to old stuff.
Yep.
Inflation is so bad that 5 years of severance pay is 20 cents.
Terrible.
Yeah. And
workers' paradise.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why so many young workers are leaving the country in droves.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, chalk that one up as another loss for Marx. Got another story here, Pete, unless you have anything more you want to say?
Nah, Dan, that's where I stand on that.
Yeah. White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's a bit of old story at the moment, but last week was a White House Correspondents' Dinner. So every year, a comedian gets up and bombs in front of people that don't really want to laugh at
this
themselves.
Is your bag. This is
your bag. Well, it used to...
Not bombing in front of people.
Yeah, well, that is my bag. But
Humor
and politics. Yeah, so I used to love the White House Correspondents' Dinner until I realized how terrible it was. Like, every year, it's just bad. Like, so for people that don't know what it is... comedian, like, it's just a love-in for journalism. It's supposed to be all the White House correspondents, obviously, and then the president and a comedian, and they're all supposed to be making fun of each other.
Mm-hmm.
But it's ballooned out, like, celebrities get involved, like John Mayer was there 1 year, John Legend as well. Like,
beautiful man, John Mayer.
Yeah, he is. I might be getting that wrong. I definitely think John Legend was there. I don't know about John Mayer.
We'll put
a question mark next to it.
Yeah, we'll call back next week.
Thank you, Nina. It's okay. I was playing with something, playing with a highlighter. Nina's taken it away, confiscated. So it's now balloon. Like, there's all these celebrities. Everyone is so full of themselves. Like, no one, every joke bombs because no one wants to laugh at themselves or the media. Or it's like, oh, you can't laugh at that because that person works there and I'm covering the story. And if I laugh, it's going to sink it. Every year it stinks. So, but this one seemed to have stunk more than others because Michelle Wolf. Sort of abandoned classic joke format and set up for just outright abuse. I think, like, the one that got the most amount of media coverage, I actually didn't think it was as bad as people are saying, but the one that got the most media coverage was Sarah Huckabee Sanders, obviously the press secretary for Trump, burns facts and then uses the ashes to create the perfect eyeshadow.
Okay.
But anyway, obviously I massacred it, but it didn't play too well either there. I don't quite get what the joke is there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a thing, like, everyone on the right wing is sort of saying, like, oh, you know, you can't say that, oh, you can't be so abusive, what happened to comedy? But isn't that what the left wing say when right wing comedians start saying stuff? So it's like, it's a whole lot of right wing snowflakes as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. That's one of my bugbears, James.
Yeah. So... I don't know. I don't see why the White House Correspondents' Dinner is a thing.
Well, I've got a theory about it, right? I'm sure it was cool the first few times it happened.
Yeah.
But there is no way it's not massively wanky.
Yeah.
I can say wanky.
Because
politics is not funny. And politicians aren't funny.
Yeah, that's true.
And political journalists aren't funny. So anyone in the political sphere who makes a gag gets way too much credit for being funny.
Yeah.
Like, it's never funny. Dash is not funny, right? But people are like...
Sam Dastyari.
Oh, it's so funny. It's because, like, you know, he makes the only gags in Canberra. Funny. He's not mid-range. I mean, he's not...
Yeah.
He's not unfunny.
And his press manager might be funny.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's funny.
Friend
of the podcast, so we probably should ease off, but...
Sorry, mate.
I don't think he'll be back on anytime
soon.
But he's
nowhere near as funny as he gets credit for.
Yeah.
Oh, Dashy is so... Anyway, so... That's it, yeah. So it's a bit wanky.
Yeah, it's like,
isn't this great? All these journos.
And every, because I've probably seen every comedian's speech at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, but it's like every comedian will start the speech by saying how all their comedian friends have warned them not to do it. It's just such a hostile crowd. Like no one wants to laugh. Yeah, so it does kind of seem like it's on the way out.
Well,
which I'm not too sad about. Like President Trump not being there for the last 2 years. Yeah. I think it's just like, why would I go?
Yeah. Oh, and he's
just to get clowned.
His sort of anti-establishment thing.
Yeah, yeah, but also like he just knows if he goes, like a comedian's is going to get retweets for standing up to Trump so bravely at dinner where everyone's expecting it. So that's all we got for main stories this week. Unless you have anything, Pete?
Nothing more from my end. All right,
cool. So we'll go to those interviews now with Andrew Bolt and Georgina Downer. But before we do, and obviously stick around on Facebook on Tuesday night. Just we'll say it again. John Roscombe on Sky News Outsiders, and then Simon and Dan Facebook Live on our page. So if you guys like the podcast, thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for subscribing. We are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, the IPA website, and you can also listen through our Hey, What Did I Miss email. So make sure you're spreading the word through any of those channels and get your friends involved as well. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave a 5-star review in the comment section because that helps us out with the rankings. Nina, how can people become even more involved with the IPA if they enjoy the podcast and if they enjoy the other stuff we do?
Well, just visit the website ipa.org.au and click on that join button, and starting as low as $22 per year, you'll get free copies of 4 editions of IPA reviews and also exclusive invitations to our events.
Very cool. We'll go to those interviews now. Okay, we are now joined once again by Herald Sun columnist and Sky News TV host Andrew Bolt. Welcome back to the show.
And father of 3 children.
Okay, yeah. Well, Bolt. I've heard really good things about the oldest one, but
I think jury's out.
Yeah, well, nothing's proven in stone. Cool. So, Dad, I don't know what you're doing this Saturday, but there's a pretty big anniversary coming along for the world, the 200th birthday of noted philosopher Karl Marx. Did you have anything you were planning to do?
Bonfire time.
Bonfire
200
time.
200 candles. Absolutely. I've disabled all the smoke alarms at home already. This is going to be a big one.
Absolutely. Well, the New York Times ran an article of someone who is really going to take Saturday hard. So Jason Barker wrote an article with the headline, "Happy Birthday, Karl Marx, You Were Right." And goes into a lot of things. This was my favorite quote. While most are in agreement about Karl Marx's diagnosis of capitalism, opinion on how to treat its disorder is thoroughly divided. And that's where Marx's originality and profound importance as a philosopher lies.
Oh, for heaven's sake. Look, this is a guy trying to have it both ways. I mean, how can you not? You've got to look over a mountain of corpses to see Marx's statue still standing there. He does say he left a dangerous and delirious philosophical legacy, right, in this piece, but then goes on to say all the wonderful things about Karl Marx. Yeah. I don't think he mentions anywhere that how many people actually died under his name.
Yeah, so
that's details, mere details, bagatelles.
Look. So for listeners out there who haven't read the article, you've got to read it. So it's still on the New York Times. I haven't taken it down, but if you control F death, there will be absolutely zero results.
That's how we do our research around here.
Control isn't that funny? I mean, that's the whole thing, Marxism, great idea, let's ignore the practice. There's the divide sometimes between many people on the left and most people who are conservatives. You're not conservative because you necessarily follow any particular disciple. You're just because you know the difference between an idea and the practice of that idea. And Marxism is absolutely number one exhibit. Great idea. Whoops, when you see it in practice, not so good. Count the corpses. Like the French Revolution, count the corpses. I thought it was really interesting when this guy goes on to say, this philosopher, associate professor of philosophy at Kyung-hee University in South Korea. He should know a bit about.
Just look over the
this is what I'm
just
thinking.
Look over the border.
Mate, would you rather be where you are right now or just on the other side of that border?
Well, he goes on to say that Marxism has. Is at least the key factor, he says, of his legacy is not philosophy but critique. Like, it was so interesting. Criticize, criticize, criticize. How about some solutions? And then he goes on to say that, you know, Marxism put us on the road to thinking about relations among people rather than capital relations determining an individual's worth. Excuse me, but what, when I say to you people, you know, there are certain people that made a vow of poverty, what immediately do you think of? You're thinking of Christianity, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I'm not a Christian, but I'm just saying. That idea that we're not, that we're actually more than our wealth has been there from not just Christianity, but before that, Socrates and, you know, Diogenes living in his barrel, you know, people actually have been rated for many qualities, and particularly spiritual qualities and their ideas, how they, whether they're great thinkers. Marx is not new. You don't look for Marx necessarily for that at all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the idea that Marx was the first person to sort of talk about relations between people is just frankly mind-boggling. My thing about Marx is we laugh at him because, you know, the economics, the jury's come back in and it's failed, right? The economic side of things has failed. But Marx still has a massive influence in cultural, in cultural studies on university campuses and things like that. What do you think about that?
Well, look, if he had written... made his condensed his works into not a volume, the volumes, you know, that fill shelves the breadth of my arms, right? But just say one neat book, and you probably could get his best thoughts in just one book.
A pamphlet, maybe.
But look, he was actually a good an interesting journalist. I got a book of his journalism, but. He would not be as powerful. I think it's the creed. It's the idea that he's got a sort of special knowledge, and you can be part of this little cult. And you know, no one else has read all those works, but you have.
Like this mystique.
And these phrases, these long phrases, these clanging phrases. And I think that makes people feel they're part of, like I say, a cult. In fact, it's become almost like a religion, a prophet, a religion. And I think that's really where it's at. People, like so many things, people feel like they're part of a group. They define themselves by the following of an idea, good ideas, against all the outsiders who are too stupid to understand them.
But to talk about the campus, so you were saying before we started recording that someone had sent you a photo from the University of Melbourne,
His legacy still lives with people who are cult-minded, club-minded. Someone just sent me this morning, he'd been walking through Melbourne University and he saw one of those pillars with all these posters. I'm looking at the picture he sent me now. And, you know, the whole thing about all these people that think they see deeper than you, see things that you don't see, and therefore they're smart. Well, sometimes people see things that you don't see because they're actually fantasizing. Mm. They're not actually seeing anything at all. So they say the most stupid things. They congratulate themselves on their wisdom when in fact they're blind. And one of the posters here, for instance, I mean, it's just plastered with socialist left posters, this pillar, you know. Campaign launch for the Victorian socialists. A message to strike... from the NTEU, there's another socialist one here, a socialismsydney.com. Come and talk about stuff. And then there's this poster. Is democracy possible under capitalism? Well, since the Socialist Alternative posted that, I suspect they think the answer is no. Is democracy possible under capitalism? Question mark. This is a poster stuck on a campus post in Melbourne, Australia. There is democracy in Australia. This idiot posted this poster. Is democracy possible under capitalism? Living under a capitalism society and sticking up a question to which the answer's all around him. Mm. And yet they're thinking they're so smart. I mean, I find that just unbelievable.
What I like is that guy puts up that poster and then just walks home, like, free. But if he put up the poster, is democracy possible under socialism in Eastern Europe in the 70s?
Yep.
Death. Immediate
exactly.
death.
Like, that's exactly right.
Like, is that
putting
you?
Up
yes,
that poster. Gone. Try putting up that poster in Tiananmen Square. See how you go.
Yeah, good luck with that. Or North Korea.
Absolutely, North Korea. I mean, some people are... It's like people say Orwell said, although it's hard to find the exact... whether he actually did say that. You know, some ideas are so stupid that only an intellectual would believe them.
That's a good one.
This is one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. So another one that I want to talk about with you. So, I mean, we can laugh at universities.
So, hey, remember we went to the University of Texas a couple of years ago?
Yes.
You were nearly floored as a former Melbourne Uni student.
Yeah.
By one of the big posts where people put up their notices.
Yeah, like a community notice board.
Community
kind of
notice board. We didn't see one notice saying socialism now or revolution or is democracy possible under capitalism or come to the socialist. It's all about come to this lesson or learn about this or.
Yeah, if you went to the University of Melbourne, you'd think they only sold those signs with the communism posters already on them. Like, I've only ever seen the communist posters on them. But we can laugh at university students because it's really easy and fun. But
no, they're scary. Like, These guys are the next public servants.
And they're the current generation. Like Cardinal Reinhard Marx. I don't know if you saw this one. But this
any relation there, James?
Well, I don't know. I tried to look it up, but I couldn't say it. But anyway, Cardinal Marx is one of Pope Francis's 9 closest advisors. He's very tied in the EU.
I'm already against.
Yeah. Well, get ready. So he, with Karl Marx's birthday coming up, he was interviewed by a magazine. He said that Communist Manifesto impressed him, helped shape Catholic doctrine, and was in no way
responsible. Helped shape Catholic doctrine.
Yeah, I think the quote was there
so
would be
Christ
no.
Christ was born 2,000 years ago. Marx was born 200 years ago.
Yeah.
And yet Marx shaped Catholicism.
There was a fourth. And absolutely denounced religion.
Yeah. There was a fourth wise man that didn't make the books, but he bought Das Kapital over to Jesus. But anyway. So his actual thing was that you can't have Catholic social teaching without Marx, and like this guy's like one of the 9 closest advisors to the Pope.
Isn't that frightening?
Yeah,
doesn't that say absolutely terrible. Everything?
Yeah, and he's
so actually, the Catholic Church, allegedly founded by St. Peter, nearly 2,000 years ago, they had it all wrong for 1,800 years until finally the prophet Carl came around.
Mm.
Oh, I see.
And then John Paul II
saying
came
religion
along.
Was the opium of the people and was rubbish. And this Catholic nut says, now that is the message I've been looking for all my life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's especially a betrayal considering Pope John Paul during the 80s was so anti-communist.
I know.
And saved so many people's lives.
Isn't it so scary?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the ironies is the Karl Marx's birthplace, Trier, in Germany, is getting a huge statue of Karl Marx. It's been donated by China. They've sent this massive thing. So they're going to stick it up. And it seems that one of the reasons they're doing it is to get Chinese tourists. You know, all these Chinese tourists will come and see this Karl Marx statue.
Yeah, Melbourne University tourists as well.
Yeah,
European tourists.
Exactly.
A few cardinals as well, maybe.
Yeah, a few cardinals praying and worshipping and throwing holy water over the statue. Isn't that the irony? So here we have one of the world's biggest police state donating a statue. Germany, which knows something about police states, is happy to put it up, right? And I think already that's an abomination. But they're doing it for capitalist reasons because, of course, China's not really communist. The only part of the legacy of Marx that they've absorbed is the dictatorship, they say the proletariat, but they're hardly proletariat anymore, the dictators. But anyway, they've retained the authoritarian system while trying to move to capitalism everywhere else. So already they betrayed Marx, but they're going to worship Marx, send it to Germany, and the reason there is not, it's the statue's going up, is actually a tribute to capitalism because they want Chinese tourists.
Yeah.
Want Chinese tourists.
Yeah, it's like the Che Guevara T-shirts.
Yes, exactly. Not free, not distributed according to need, those Che Guevara T-shirts, but for $15, please.
Oh, $15 is a bargain. Yeah, like $25.
What was the reaction of the townspeople to that decision? Has there been...
I don't know. That'd be a very interesting question, but it's going up and the mayor is happy there, so what can we tell? All the businessmen are rubbing their hands.
Yeah, all the
business.
Yeah, they haven't stopped laughing yet. So we've been talking Jesus. I kind of want to talk Yeezus at the moment. So obviously, we've been discussing this on the show last week. It's been in hay last 2 weeks, but I just want to get your thoughts on this. I don't think we've actually talked about this, but Kanye West, obviously one of, if not the biggest musicians in the world, has started tweeting his support for Trump, his support for Candace Owens, who's a right-wing thinker, and Scott Adams, another one.
This is how I keep up with youth culture.
I did want to know.
James interprets it for me.
Yeah, can you name one Kanye West song? No, was that a trick question?
He's not a singer, right?
No, well, yeah. They're all songs. They're great.
Doesn't he rap?
He does, yeah. That's still not a song. That's a song.
It's a song.
It's a song.
Okay.
Go on, Dave.
No, I can't.
But anyway, do you see this as like any big cultural moment, like the world's biggest musician sort of going away
from
it?
As far as I understand Kanye West, from what you've tried to tell me over the last year or two.
Dominic, my brother, big fan as well, so he'll also have your ear.
Then I better not say anything mean. But it strikes me that him striking poses is part of his gig, right?
Yeah.
And this is the quickest way to getting noticed.
Yeah, I kind of did think it was like to sell some out. Like he's got an album coming out. It's to generate a bit of publicity. It's like the number one. Yeah, but
on the other hand, of course, Trump would appeal to someone like him, right?
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah.
There are also pose strikers and, you know, two fingers to the crowd. I noticed that his wife told him, honey, make it clear to the public that you don't like a lot of what Trump stands for.
I was going
to
ask you about that.
Buy a little insurance there.
Have you, as an outspoken public figure, have you ever received a call from the Mrs. Andrew, you know, don't go too far this time? Anything
have
like
I,
that?
Jimmy?
Well, you know. I'm not privy to all conversations. But
not all of them, but as a slight sample of what might pass.
Yeah.
No, she does. She does.
Okay.
But you know, part of it is you've got to say something that people are going to listen to without giving them an excuse to say, oh, well, that's just over the top, so I won't listen to anything. But I've got to say that when I was a kid, I used to ride my bicycle, priding myself that I could ride it without any hands. And my career has sort of run the same way.
Okay. Yep. Fair.
But do you sort of say, like, this being a big thing, like that much, that bigger celebrity being able to speak out about Trump and the conversation it started, and one of Kanye West's proteges, Chance the Rapper, who, you know, did phone booths for Barack Obama saying black people don't have to be Democrats. Do you sort of see this as a bit of a thing now?
Do you?
Yeah.
Kanye West is one. Name two.
Well, Chance the Rapper. Well, I don't think he's voting Trump, but
there is no one. There's no two. So it's not a trend. It's it's an exception. I mean, I noticed that Shania Twain was. What's her name?
Shania Twain.
Dad stopped listening to music after ABBA.
As like, you can tell, I read the name, but I don't listen to it.
Yeah,
Shania Twain, is it? Anyway, I saw that she said, oh, I could understand why people might vote for Trump. And then immediately.
Was forced to say,
well, I don't actually like what he says and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we have just Kanye West, right?
Taylor Swift is clearly right wing.
Yeah, but she won't say it.
She won't say it.
Yeah.
So it's one and a half.
But is it funny, you know, you can, on the other hand, you can say, you know, hold up a severed head of Donald Trump and all that. And, you know, all right, there was a bit of reaction to that, but your career still goes. You don't need to zone it.
Yeah, she's still selling out stadiums. Like, she got kicked off the New Year's Eve stuff, but yeah.
Oh, right, but that's CNN, you know. She'll be back some stage.
I think she'll be back.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you can't even say, I can understand how some people might vote for Trump.
Mm.
You don't have to hold anyone's severed head up.
Yeah.
Like Hillary Clinton's head. You don't have to do anything. And that's already almost a career ender. Mm. Isn't that incredible? What does that say? You know what it says? The intolerance of the left.
Absolutely.
The absolute intolerance of the left. I just find that really quite freaky. And that's one of the good things. I'm now old enough to think, if I lose my job, I probably still can survive on baked beans for the rest of my life.
But James can support you.
Yeah, James can support me.
Yeah, breadwinner.
Absolutely. But just the ability, the sheer freedom to be able to say what I think without, you know, caring.
Yeah.
Well, I do care a little bit. I mean, people still sue, damn it.
I was skeptical of all this, but I do kind of think like it. Kanye West has kind of said that, you know, if you really commit to it, you can just sort of say I'm a fan of Trump, and you know, every manager, like I think with Shania Twain, she still obviously thinks that Trump is a good guy, but her manager made her do that.
Well, she agreed to it.
Yeah, but
I kind of think a manager bullied her into responsibility. That.
Yeah, I'm saying she should have stuck to her guns a bit more, but clearly she clearly still thinks that in her head, but the manager says what a risk to the career it is. Kanye West is going to be number one for a month next month. I think it's kind of showing you're not throwing away your career when you start talking about the fact that you might be a little right-wing.
But that's interesting, isn't it? You're quite right. I wonder whether more people should actually break out of this. When you have a look at those Hollywood movies that sort of flog left-wing causes, the Robert Redford kinds and all that, right? And even Al Gore's follow-up to Inconvenient Truth. Bomb, 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 bomb. Syriana, bomb, you know, they just bomb. Hollywood claps and everyone else yawns. And you wonder whether if they, Roseanne Barr, her latest, you know, comeback thing where some of her character was sort of a Trump follower. I mean, she stacked the show also with Trump haters, but bang, it was the biggest comedy release in many years.
Mm.
So you can do it. The money's there, but apparently it's the social status that and the deal makers that the entertainers seem to think of first.
Well,
I'll never eat lunch in this town again, you know, where I'll be in the naughty corner.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you definitely haven't seen this movie yet, but the new Avengers movie, which is now going to be the biggest movie of all time.
Is it?
Yeah, it's like already about.
So this is how I keep. I tell you, mate. Yeah. This is how I keep up with.
Same.
It's like, okay, so the stat is it's like the second fastest movie ever to $800 million, and it hasn't even opened in China yet. So, like, you just think once it opens in China, it's going to go gangbusters. The bad guy is just someone who read the population bomb. His whole thing is the universe has a finite number of resources, and eventually we're going to run out, so we have to kill half the population of the universe. Like, that's just
that China guy. Would China want that in China? I don't know. Maybe. Well, but we actually had a movement like that. Remember the Paul Ehrlich with the population bomb?
Yeah, so, like, but the bad guy is this... clearly like an environmentalist nut job.
Mm.
It's kind of interesting that...
Wonderful.
Yeah, like the bad guys are so
well, what about
left.
Team America?
Yeah, yeah.
America also did pretty well by mocking the Hollywood liberal.
Well, the South Park guys are undefeated. Like everything they do
fantastic.
Is fantastic.
You see, this is, I think, the challenge for conservatives on so many issues. Drag it to the marketplace. If we can just get it past the gatekeepers, just get it past the intelligentsia, if we can just drag it to the marketplace so that people can buy it or vote for it or enjoy it or see it or read it, you're okay.
Mm.
And the enemies of all that is the censorship, you know, the people's desire for censorship, the anti-free speech laws, not taking things to referenda, things like that. That's what we've got to get past.
Yeah. And I wonder after the Me Too movement, there's a lot of places in Hollywood with vacant seats that someone might be able to fill. Like, there's a lot of people who are out of a job and for good reason.
Hey, you, me, Jimmy, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for calling me that on the podcast.
Sorry, James.
That's like the second time as well. I was like, okay. There was another one where the classical liberal hero, wasn't there? Was that another movie recently?
Classical liberal hero. Black Panther, yeah.
That's right.
Sorry.
I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, I'm not a big superhero movie guy, but Black Panther is...
Except you've seen everything that we're talking about.
And I haven't seen Black Panther. I did see Avengers, and I was kind of dragged to that one. But so Black Panther is... this is a bit of a tangent. We're late in the podcast, but you've got this like mythical African kingdom that was because of like
some science thing they've never been
exposed to the outside world.
Mm-hmm.
And the bad guy wants to use that science to kill white people. He doesn't see white people and black people as being able to coexist. And the hero is just like, no, let's open ourselves up to the world, trade, and discuss our culture. And they've got like, you know, conservatives loved it. It's a country with clearly defined borders and, you know, a strong sense of culture.
Half of the audience is going there, kill the whitey, kill the whitey.
Oh, yeah, I saw a lot of tweets like, man, I'm supporting the black guy, the bad guy in this movie.
Correct. Well, how about the new play that's being put on by the Sydney Theatre Company?
That's bait.
It's bait. You say it's bait, but the Shire Council gave it $40,000. New South Wales government gave it, I think, $27,000. The Sydney Theatre Company's putting it up, and it's a fantasy, one of those... wonderful revenge fantasies, wonderful, where the black heroine goes and kills white people.
Oh, I was thinking kill climate deniers.
Okay, yeah. No, there's a lot going around now. Kill, kill, kill. Kill anyone you don't like, and the left lapping it up.
Yeah.
But here is one. This is a new one, but Naki Louis, or however she pronounces her name, given all this taxpayer money and a stage at Sydney Theatre Company, indulge her fantasies. And she, by the way, she's got the blood of the oppressors in her background as well. I mean, she doesn't only have Aboriginal ancestors. About all these massacres that she imagines, and her heroine goes and kills every white person that may be implicated in them.
Right. It's a weird, weird place to end the interview, but we have got like 8 minutes over, so I kind of need to wrap this up somewhere.
Are you going to cut out looking, all the bits where I called you Jimmy?
We'll find them and isolate them, destroy them, and put them in a pit of fire so that they can never be seen again. Tigers are looking good. So
Tigers, go the Tiggers.
Yeah.
Except I won't be able to see it. I'm off in Adelaide. You keep me in touch, will you?
No, well, I'll be texting you results. Cool. All right. Thank you, Dad.
Thanks a lot.
See you guys.
Okay, we are now joined once again by IPA Research Fellow Georgina Downer. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Great to be back with you.
Cool. So next Tuesday, big day for Australia. The always exciting, always pulse quickening, I don't know.
That's a thing.
Yeah, that's pulses quicken.
Heart rate.
Heart rate, that's the one I'm thinking of. But the budget. So we talked a little bit about it. Apparently they're like, you beauty, this budget's looking really good because of all that extra cash they're going to get from the corporate tax cuts that didn't go through. So Georgina, what do you reckon is, what do you make of the budget and what do you want to see in the budget?
Well, the previews so far that the government's been releasing in dribs and drabs over the last few weeks indicates that there'll be some income, personal income tax cuts, which everyone gets excited about.
Cool.
Especially the top 10% of Australians in terms of income who pay 45% of income tax in Australia. Which is,
but that's not the fair share, let's be honest.
I thought they were plundering everyone, the country.
Apparently we don't want those people. According to the left, we don't want those people, except we want their taxes. So
we want their money.
Them to earn less, but then do we still want their taxes? I'm not quite sure how the left's working that out. But I mean, they're obviously better at maths than us. Voodoo economics, I think they call it. But we'll have these personal income tax cuts. The quantum of those, though, I think will be less than exciting. I think it will be very, very gradual over 10 years. But it will be good for the government politically going to election to champion personal income tax, because ultimately the company tax cuts, while we all know they're going to be great for the economy and actually deliver wage growth and capital investment and productivity improvements in Australia.
More jobs.
More jobs, you know. Kind of handy.
Yeah.
Generally, the polls are showing that they're not that popular. And I think for the government, they've got to have a sweetener, and the personal income tax cuts will be it.
So you're telling me the government's going to use the budget for political purposes?
I know. Yeah. I mean, it's never been done before.
She makes the big calls.
Yeah.
That's why we get her on.
Other exciting news, the mooted increase in the Medicare levy that was announced in last year's budget has now been scrapped. So we won't have, we won't have to pay, I think, another 0.5% in order to, that was going to fund the NDIS. And the government now is saying, oh no, we're actually flush with cash. We can fund the NDIS just fine. We don't need this increase to the Medicare levy. So I welcome that. I think not increasing the Medicare levy is a good thing. I would just say, though, that those specific taxes levied to fund specific projects are a very, very bad idea, just as a general rule, because I served as an Australian diplomat in Japan for several years, and that's quite a popular policy in Japan to have a tax that is specifically levied to maintain the road network, and then they put it all into a fund for the roads. But it then removes from the government any flexibility to use that money for other priorities when, for example, they've got enough roads or the roads are well maintained.
And there's a war. But,
and there's a war or, you know, there's something else they want to spend money on. Or they don't actually want to levy that tax anymore. They might want to actually give that money back to people. They can't, because it's carved out specifically for one project or policy. So I think these, as a policy mechanism, these are very, very bad ideas, these policy-specific taxes.
Do we have many of them? Do we have lots?
No. I mean, the Medicare levy, of course, is a specific one that's levied to fund the health system, but no, we don't use those policy levers nearly as much as they do, say, in Japan, which is a good thing.
Right. So
in Hey What Did I Miss yesterday, we had a graph that showed how much spending was increasing as a percentage of GDP and how out of whack it is with the revenue gained from tax. I kind of want to zoom in on two particular spending measures that have been announced for this budget, and we can just go through the merits. The around $50 million on the Australian Space Agency. Now, I'm a fan of looking at the stars as much as the next guy, but I think space is kind of done. $50 million sounds like space a hell.
and James, that's just seed capital funding.
Yeah, exactly. So down the line, a lot more going into it. If I get to land on the moon, I will have a conversation then, but I don't think I'm going to get to it. And saving the reef, a $400 million package, and then obviously a friend of the IPA, Dr. Peter Redd, doing all the powerhouse of work on how the Great Barrier Reef isn't under as much threat as we thought it was. It's still getting $400 million.
That's right. So Space Agency has been something that's been mooted for quite some time. And in actual fact, when I was in Japan, so the Japanese are massively into space and they have satellites. So Australia doesn't have its own satellites. It actually leases them off other countries or companies. And that's been, we have this enormous, obviously, territory, especially the outback, which is great for space activity. So you can see the sky really easily, and you can also launch things from our outback without disturbing large population centres. But I feel pretty nervous about an expenditure of $50 million when you have the United States winding up a lot of NASA's activities. You know, ultimately, they've got to, it's got to be some return to the taxpayer, to the country with those huge investments. And I'm not quite sure whether the government's really encouraged the private sector enough to get involved in these activities. I think there's lots of interest, and you know, they're spruiking it as this is just seed capital, but the rest will be private sector involvement. Well, fine. Well, why didn't you just start off with the private sector? And
yeah,
I mean, this is sort of that classic industry policy, which ends up just costing us a lot of money, but doesn't necessarily have the returns to the economy that we would expect from an outlay of $50 million on the Great Barrier Reef. Yeah, look, I think this is where people like Peter Ridd are so important. They play such an important role in reminding us that you've always got to look at the science, take emotion and ideology out of decision-making when it comes to the environment. And there has been way too much emotion and ideology in environmental debates. No one wants to see the reef die. The reef is incredibly important to Australia's tourism, but also our biodiversity.
Yeah. Culture as well. Like, everyone just loves having the reef.
Of course. So no one wants to see the reef die or disappear. We want a healthy reef. But we also need to make sure that we can have a healthy agricultural system and a healthy mining industry and jobs and a thriving economy. So there's a whole lot of things to balance. And Peter Ridd's been fantastic at asking the question, are these reports and all this research done into the reef, are they put through the usual academic rigour that you would expect of major scientific research? And his view is they aren't. And for that, he has been punished by his employers, James Cook University, which is extraordinary.
Yeah.
So I hope that there are voices like Peter Ridd's when it comes to expending this $500 million that the government's just announced that make sure that this money is going towards addressing problems that are real and well-researched and academic rigour and scientific rigour applied.
Cool. All right. So we might change tracks in a moment. Now, first time we had you on the show was a huge moment, watershed moment for the podcast, our first international
and
guest.
And Australia.
the statue on its way. But you were in East Timor helping out with the election. And I understand you're about to go back to help him out with another one.
I am. I'm going back on Monday to Timor-Leste, as they call it now. And I'm doing some work with the International Republican Institute, which is a United States not-for-profit that was set up in the early 80s by Ronald Reagan, and he and the Congress at the time set up the National Endowment for Democracy. Now, IRI, International Republican Institute's activities focus on promoting democracy around the world. And what we're doing next week is the same as we did last year, is we're observing the election that is taking place on Saturday week, making sure that there's no vote rigging, vote buying, any kind of untoward pressure or behaviour. And if we do observe that, we report that. We can't interfere in the process at all. We just are literally observers. But I was there a few weeks ago as well, working with some female political candidates on how to campaign effectively and giving them some tips and advice about what they can do. There's a big thing in Timor is they have these strong revolutionary leaders who led them through the independence movement and fought, you know, guerrilla warfare style against the Indonesians. These people are still very prominent in Timorese politics and society. Mm. Now, people vote for them out of loyalty and nostalgia, not necessarily asking the question, but what are the policies of these people, of these leaders, and are they delivering for the community? So a lot of the work I've done with the Timorese political candidates is saying, let's start talking about issues and how your party might have policy solutions for particular problems.
Absolutely.
That face Timorese people, rather than vote for this revolutionary leader, yeah, because he saved us in the 1980s.
That happens 90s, a lot, doesn't it, where kind of like these sort of, they have a big change and then it's a completely different skill set. Yeah. Certainly happened in South Africa.
It really is a completely different skill set.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of, and you understand that, a lot of sort of nostalgia, sentimentality,
yeah, definitely, yeah,
towards these people. Yeah, very significant figures who put their lives on the line to deliver Timorese independence. So, you know, of course, due deference to the contribution these people have made, but are they the right people to lead a country and govern a country and expend money, government money, taxpayer money, or in the case of Timor, mainly the money generated out of the oil and gas fields in the Timor Sea, so sovereign wealth money. Are they the right people to do that, and are they the right people to improve the living conditions in Timor, which are still very, very, very difficult?
Yeah. What was the name of the organisation again?
The International Republican Institute.
Right. And you're a big fan of these guys?
Big fan.
Right. So yes. You describe yourself as a staunch Republican. That's big.
Yeah.
I mean, you've come a long way since the Brexit videos, but yeah, Georgina's now a Republican.
I think it is very difficult to overlay US politics into an Australian context.
Oh, it's like, it's actually like the US version of Republican. I thought I had you as like turning the back on the monarchy.
Oh,
like,
God, no. Yeah. No.
That's
no.
Where I was going with that bit.
No. Sorry. I didn't get the illusion. Yeah. No. Staunch monarchist.
Fair enough.
Very committed to Her Majesty.
Have you got a party for the royal wedding coming up?
Well, I do actually, because it coincides with my cousin's wedding. So we will be doing the dual cousin's wedding plus Harry and Meghan. Although I'm not a big fan of Meghan. I'm worried about this marriage.
What's your beef?
Think of me as the older sister tutting.
What's your concern here, Georgina?
She's come out of Hollywood, American, I don't know, second marriage.
That's like classic royal family. Oh, the Americans.
Exactly.
Oh, look what happened last time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's the thing. Look what happened last time. Yeah, yeah. Last time a British royal married an American divorcee, ended in an abdication.
But a really good movie, King's Speech. Is she watch that again. Yeah.
Is she and The Crown, of course. She is a divorcee.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I know. That.
Yeah. And like American and from Hollywood.
Mm. So. I don't know which of those three is worse. But, yeah.
I think the Hollywood one will have you in the most trouble. But, cool. So, Georgina, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you to Andrew Bolt and Georgina Downer for those interviews. Really fun chat, very interesting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be sending Dad some Kanye West songs to listen to. Now, let's fly through some stories that made us laugh this week.
You go first.
Thank you, Pete. Very gracious of you.
That's just the kind of guy I am.
Cool. So, Q&A clap of the week. Oh. One of our favourite segments, if not our favourite segment. Maybe our only segment.
It's our only segment.
No, we've got others.
We've got Nina's segment.
Yeah.
Which probably happened once.
Pete speaking truth to power. Dormant.
No, it's not me speaking. Yeah. That's dormant.
I think the reason it's dormant is I still don't quite understand what it is.
Okay. I'll explain it after.
Yeah. But let's get into this. So obviously you guys would have seen the photo of the North Korean dictator and the South Korean prime minister shaking hands.
Yep.
Huge photo.
We'll bat first.
That was the bat, mate. That was the meme that was going around the internet.
The cricket community. Anyway.
Very relatable, Pete, to our mass audience. But anyway, huge photo. As I've said, like, if you showed me that photo 6 months ago and said this will happen in 6 months, would never have believed you in a million years.
Mm.
But here we are. So,
crazy world that we live in, James.
Crazy world. So the South Korean prime minister has come out and said Trump deserves a Nobel Peace Prize for all he's done. So it's a pretty huge claim, pretty huge time.
Wow.
But apparently it's actually bad, Pete.
Is that?
I'm going to quote here Jane Caro, one of Australia's foremost thinkers on these things. But she's
snarky.
Very snarky. As was this. So she was on the drum talking about it. And here's what she makes of it. Quote, it's a dance between China, South and North Korea and the US president. There is only room for one crazy person in that dance and America's taken that space. So Kim Jong-un has to act sane. He hasn't got any choice.
Okay. Thank you.
That's her take.
You can have more than one person dancing crazily.
Yeah.
Where's that in the legislation?
Oh, Pete, it's just simple international relations, man. You've got room for one crazy person.
Yeah.
I also just like, how much do you have to hate Trump to go, he's more crazy than someone that straps political dissidents to artillery and had his uncle killed in an airport?
Yeah. I mean,
say what you want about the guy, but he's not doing that.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. It's just one of those again.
But anyway, so we've already played the Q&A clap, but to explain what the segment is, so Pete and I, we watch Q&A, we just see the most like base left-wing knee-jerk
People know the segment.
Oh, well, if they're new to the show.
Okay, sorry. Yep. Good. That's why you're the host, mate. Yep.
Back in your corner, mate. Pete and I get jealous if we watch the Q&A and we see people get their claps. So Pete and I have decided that we're just going to give our own political opinions inspired by this week's Q&A clap, and we'll just give ourselves a Q&A clap to make up for it. So Pete, give me an opinion.
Yeah, look, I think Jane Kerr is on the right track. I don't think it's dancing. I think it's drinking games, though. And I tend to think, you know, if Kim Jong-un and Xi Jinping and Donald Trump were a boat race team, which I'm sure everyone's familiar with, and Donald Trump took too long to scull, then, you know, China and North Korea would have to pick up the slack.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't quite understand that one, Pete.
Yeah, I didn't.
Might get a Q&A club, but it's not get a James Bolt club.
You got to think about it, mate.
Oh, okay, right. I'll let it marinate. See, I don't think Jane Carr is on the right track, and I try to think of something funny to come up with for the Q&A club moment, but clearly Jane Carr has already taken that space, and so I have to act sane. I haven't got any choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Very good.
Yeah, thank you.
Very brave as well.
Brave stand. Cool. So we'll move on. Pete, what have you got?
Well, can I just pick any of these?
Yeah. Pete, I might be the host, but I'm not the dictator.
All right.
I'm not the Kim Jong-un of the podcast.
Let's do the coffee in California. Actually, yeah, no, let's do the coffee in California.
More of a Xi Jinping, I reckon.
So where are we? Oh, it's pretty double side. Okay, so in California, this is actually in March, but it's just kind of emerged now. There was a judge that ruled that coffee companies have to put a warning on their coffee cups because coffee technically could cause cancer. It hasn't been made into a law yet, but it's just sort of percolating. Get it? what should I read here? So acrylamide is a byproduct of roasting coffee beans and appears on California's list because studies show that lab rats are more likely to develop cancer when administered extremely high doses of the chemical. A human being would have to drink approximately 16,000 cups of instant coffee a day for it to be a risk.
I think you are at a risk of a few things if you're drinking 16,000 cups of coffee a day.
Well, so the judge is right.
Yeah, I just love that, I'm going to assume the judge is left-wing here, of just like this needs to be proved that since it causes cancer, it needs to have a warning label, like people can't be able to make their own decisions about it.
I reckon he's just fine about the rules.
Yeah.
This is what the law says. I don't care.
No, but he's just made this precedent out of nowhere. It's not like the scientific community saying, like, well, it's proven. Like, coffee cups cause cancer.
That's true.
It's just like, you know what? I'm going to ignore the scientific community, despite like the left's love of like, oh, you got to trust the science on these things. It's like, I'm going to ignore the scientific community. That goes on this coffee cup now.
Yep.
What would the warning labels be, do you reckon?
Just
someone really alert at their desk, like someone being productive?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone.
Someone not hungover anymore for a brief period.
This could be you. Anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen. I didn't do that much research.
You didn't do any research, Pete. You just quoted the first two paragraphs of an article very boringly.
You don't want to just read it.
Undenied.
If people want to know more, they'll look into it. You don't want to. Less is more. That's why.
Less is more.
But how about some?
I found this. He didn't even.
Good on you. Okay. Good on you, Pete. All right.
So here's an. I got a story here. So. Oh. Tim Sutomasan.
Okay, I thought I was doing that, but you go.
Oh, nope, sorry. All right, I'll move on to a different one then. So last week we talked about the protesters at Duke University and how they had a protest at an alumni event. It didn't go too well.
Yes.
And they were awaiting punishment and they told a paper that they didn't deserve to be punished because it would make them sad.
Yes.
Seemed to be the kind of idea they were going for there. And we all had a big laugh, like, isn't that funny? Like, yeah. I just don't want to feel sad, therefore you can't punish me. Turns out it's a winning formula.
Oh, really?
No, I'm kidding. Duke History Professor William Schaff said he, along with 100 other faculty members, signed a letter of administration urging them not to punish the students who protested.
That is terrible. So it was like the academics supported them.
Yeah, the academics are like, look, they don't deserve to be punished. Here's a quote from Schaff. Those of us who have been working with the students for a long time agreed that the initial efforts of seeking disciplinary action just seemed to be the wrong way to resolve these issues. It's much more important to talk than to punish.
No.
Sometimes it's really effective to punish.
So
they ruined a party, basically.
Yeah, they ruined a party. They ruined other people talking.
Yeah.
But apparently just talking out. And then
they're just like, oh, I'm going to cry if you punish me, so don't cry.
Yeah, and I was like,
I'm sad.
Maybe Nina should have done this segment.
This is Nina's cut sick.
Yeah, Nina's cut sick.
That's your segment.
That's my segment. Nina cut there. Sick.
But they kind of defeat their own purpose. Like, they've got, like, the teachers are saying, like, let's, you know, we agree they shouldn't be punished. We're not going to punish them. Therefore, we've come to a mutually agreeable solution. But then the students' quote is saying, we're celebrating this win and excited to hear the administration chose the correct action. Like, they're thinking it's a win. You guys lost.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So what, is that it? Is it over?
Yeah, it's over. Like, they're not getting punished.
That's it.
The students, the schools dropped the charges.
That's terrible.
Yeah. So, like, if you're at Duke University, obviously we have a growing Duke University fan base, but if you're at Duke University, you can do literally anything to disrupt an event and no punishment.
We should use that when we stuff up.
Yeah, well, now that we know that the winning formula is to just say, don't punish me, it'll make me sad.
Yeah.
We're home free. Cool. So we kind of discussed this with Andrew Bolt, but the new Avengers movie, obviously breaking so many records. I think I said this on the show, but it's like already the quickest, second quickest, at 800 million, hasn't even opened in China yet. So it's about to go gangbusters. What I like about this movie is the bad guy is clearly an environmentalist, as we talked about, Dad.
Yes.
And everyone seems to be loving the movie, and there's a whole lot of things to love, except if you're a writer with Racked Magazine. This in article was titled Superheroes Don't Wear Ponytails and Yes It's Sexist. I just love "and yes it's sexist" as if like, is that sexist? Oh right, it is sexist.
Thank
like,
you for
headlines
clarifying.
Already clarified.
So this is female superheroes.
Yeah, so the quote from the article, so why don't Black Widow, Gamora, Scarlet Witch and Mantis see, like, I saw Infinity War, but I didn't really know any of the characters. I just saw a whole lot of action, but I think those are four characters that are in Infinity War.
And
superheroines from beyond Infinity War, from Wonder Woman to Jessica Jones, Elektra, Storm, She-Hulk goes on, ever seem to take a second to throw their hair into a messy bun before doing an activity and fighting crime. This is the kind of thing where I'm just like, if this actually ruins your day, if this really gets you frustrated, then you're kind of missing the point. Mm. Like, maybe just long hair going around kind of looks cooler in action scenes would be my thing.
It's so easy to be a columnist on the left. You just pick a stupid thing and write about it and say it's
and say you're and offended.
Yeah.
And then done.
What about... Oh,
jeez. All right.
What about...
Easy, Pete.
What about Lara Croft? Tomb Raider. She wore a head...
Exception that proves the rule, maybe.
Mm.
Yeah. That's also how you do it. You just say any example that proves me wrong is the exception that proves that I'm right.
I reckon Wonder Woman had like a thing.
Yeah. But also, like, isn't Thor going around, like, I don't watch a whole lot of superhero movies. Nina might be able to help us out here. Doesn't Thor go around hair blowing in the breeze as he fights people with that hammer?
A resident Thor.
Yeah, so men don't get ponytails either.
Yeah, if he wants to. But he never has a ponytail.
Yeah.
As far as I remember.
So you're a Thor fan? Is that what this is what this is telling
I'm
me?
I'm not really a fan of I like anyone
the new,
there.
I liked the new movie. Ragnarok was really funny.
You yeah, I haven't watched that one actually.
Yeah, it's really good. Very yeah. funny. Don't. But he has very short hair, so I can't really.
He cut his hair. Yeah.
Or had his hair
he
cut.
Used to have, a bit of a he used to point. Have his hair long.
Yes.
But he never had it in a ponytail. I believe like girls should have a messy bun when they fight.
Oh, so you're with it. Do you think it's sexist or do you think it's just
no,
a plot point?
No, it's just for...
to get the hair out of their eyes.
For, yeah. Basically that.
What do you do when you're getting a punch on?
When Nina starts fighting...
I was like, I'll have my messy bun. Yeah. And it's like, go on with me. Like,
Nina versus right Thanos.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
I think you're the missing ingredient for that Avengers movie, Nina.
Well, they never called me.
Yeah.
I'm always available.
Except for Friday morning.
Except for Friday morning.
Yeah, this podcast comes first.
Of course.
I don't care how close Thanos is to completing the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yes. I've signed a contract vault.
Yeah. With a specific Thanos clause.
Right. Sorry for not participating in that discussion for the last 30 seconds. I was trying to get my notes in order.
Wait, you have notes?
The next topic is academics at Melbourne Uni.
Very cool.
Academics at Melbourne Uni have... are going to strike or have striked, have voted to go on strike for 4 hours. So a couple of working days. Nah, just kidding. I love academics.
You are one.
No, I'm not. Have voted to go on strike because they feel like their academic freedom is being limited by the new workplace agreement by the University of Melbourne. So the University of Melbourne has sneakily taken out the academic freedom clause from their agreement. And so the NTEU, which is National Tertiary and Education Union, says that this is an attack on their freedom of speech. So they're striking. Firstly, it's like, where were you guys when Peter Ridd had his academic freedom threatened and Bjorn Lomborg? And secondly, it's like, so the reason why the university is doing this is so that their academics don't say controversial and unwelcome things. When has any academic from Melbourne Uni ever said anything controversial in the last 2 decades? Well, you guys don't need freedom of speech. You all think the same thing and it's fine.
Yeah, controversial to us maybe, but like the rest of the academics would be like, very pertinent point.
That's
very
right.
Very pertinent point.
No, I mean, sort of technically we should be thankful that there is some support for freedom of speech amongst the academic community, even though it's checkered.
Yeah, but it's 100%. Like you said, because they weren't there for Peter Ridd, they weren't there for Bjorn Lomborg.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I believe in my academic right to say what I think, but other people that I disagree with,
absolutely not
at all. Not at all.
So anyway, hopefully they win because academic freedom is good.
Yeah, but hopefully they also come to the realization that academic freedom is good for everyone.
That's true. That's real.
That's kind of...
that's really deep, mate.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, I should give myself another Q&A clap.
Okay. Thank you.
It was brave, so...
Definitely brave, Stan. I've got one more. Sorry, this blew up on Twitter over the last few days. A lot of coverage. So we had a high school student in Salt Lake City, in Utah. She wore a Chinese dress to prom.
Yep.
Like, really lovely dress. Just posted the photos online. And then somehow this guy, Jeremy Lamb, who's a blogger on race relations in America.
Oh, great. Can't wait to read his stuff.
he quote tweeted it saying, "My culture is not your goddamn prom dress." That had 179,000 likes the last time I checked, which is hyper viral.
It's a big
on
number.
Twitter. Yeah, that's huge. But I also like, just as a side note here, so it's had 61,000 people. It's talking about 179,000 likes. He still has like 10,000 followers. That is so many people that have taken a look at his profile and gone, nah, not for me. I like this tweet, not the rest.
Not having that.
But anyway, so it started this huge conversation in the US as to whether or not wearing this dress is cultural appropriation, or maybe it's just like she liked the dress, she liked the culture, and she wanted to wear that dress. I mean, my take is always just, you know, wear the dress if you like it.
That's one of your mottos in life,
well,
really.
Yeah, wear the dress.
Wear the dress.
Yeah. But no, like, again, this goes back to what Dennis Prager says, which is like the only two people in the world, like the only two groups of people that think that white people shouldn't interact with other cultures are the modern left and white supremacists.
Yeah.
Like, surely the whole melting pot thing is that anyone can wear that kind of dress. You know, obviously, you want to keep it tasteful and positive, but anyone can wear that dress. Like, that's the whole point of where we're going.
Yep.
Anyway, I also liked, so you would agree, Pete?
I would agree with you very much so, James.
Cool.
Are you going to say a thing? I'll say a thing.
You'll say a thing.
The thing about this that was scary was that both of these people were ordinary. It wasn't like some famous movie star. It was just a normal girl.
Yeah.
And I think he had like 1,700 Twitter followers.
Yeah.
And it's like massive.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So many people got involved in this one.
So like anyone, anytime can just suddenly have their whole life turned upside down. And she was really strong and she was like,
didn't back down.
I can wear the dress.
Yeah.
But she could have easily been like, oh my God, what have I done wrong?
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully she's okay. But she didn't on Twitter say, I'm not going to back down. I really like the dress. So good on her. And it did seem like on her profile, most of the followers were like, yeah, good on you. So she's getting support. Yeah. But yeah, obviously this guy's also getting support for him. Out of nowhere, just criticizing someone he never met.
Yeah.
So,
he's a blogger on Race James.
So. Yeah. What I did like though was that it's kind of exposed that he's a bit of a shady character as well.
That's
right. It turns out that this is coming from Reason. Turns out that Lamb, he's a YouTuber. He talks about racial issues from an African American perspective. Mike Headley, a YouTuber who talks about racial issues from an African American's perspective, waded through Lamb's past tweets and found a few in which the Asian American wrote things such as, I can't quote them on a family podcast, but suffice to say that he uses the N-word, he uses a few other words that probably shouldn't be spoken.
Mm-hmm.
So I do like how the person that ends up and then he went on a tweet thread about, like, the last 48 hours have really opened my eyes to a lot of things about me. I do like he's clearly gone at, like, oh, the pretty white girl wore a dress, I'm going to bring her down. But he's the one that gets brought down. So,
poetic justice, you might say, James.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone's like, oh, this show's the dark art of an American soul. And it's like, it's so stupid that this is the kind of thing that gets popular on Twitter. But, guy got what was coming to him.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool. So that is it for the show this week. But I do have one thing I want to say. So Pete was kind enough to indulge me in a bit of Richmond chat in September last year. And now his beloved Melbourne Victory have about to play the grand final.
Grand final, yeah. Melbourne Victory versus Newcastle Jets. I can't remember what the stadium's called, but it's in Newcastle at 7:50 p.m. this Saturday night.
I'm going up.
I'll be the
guy sending off the first flare.
The drunk bloke in the
oh, the only one.
Bucket hat. No, come and find me. Come and have a froth. Yes. Any Nova Castrians that are listening, send me a message.
Cool. So we'll, what do you reckon the odds are?
Oh, I reckon we can win.
It's a big week for you for soccer because also Liverpool made the
Champions League
grand final.
Yeah, so it has been a big week. That's true.
Yeah, a lot of emotional stakes for Pete. I'm either going to have very happy Pete or very sad Pete.
This is why I support lots of teams because one of them is always winning.
Yes. My beloved Denver Nuggets got knocked out on the final day of the regular season.
Yep.
But that was a perfect segue into Richmond is absolutely dominating.
Yeah. Cool. Nah, look, Victory can win.
Sweet.
3-2.
Do you have anything more you want to say?
There you go.
3-2.
Who's the score? Oh, no.
What's the Liverpool score?
It'll be 6-6 and we'll win on penalties.
Huge.
6-6.
Yep.
Yeah. That's big call. Cool. So thank you guys so much for listening. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. We certainly did. Thank you to Andrew Bolt and Georgina Downer for the interviews. If you guys are listening thank you guys so much for listening and subscribing. Remember, we are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, our website, and through our Hey What Did I Miss email. So make sure you're telling your friends about the show, telling your family members, and try to get them involved on any platform that they want to have involved with. And if you are listening on iTunes, make sure you leave us that 5-star review. Perhaps you can give your own Q&A clap moment. We'll read it out on the show, or you can give a tip for the show, maybe something about Pete's need to research, and maybe some other stuff. Maybe I talk too much. Nina, how can people get involved with the rest of the show?
Well, just visit our website at ipa.org.au and click on that join button. And starting as low as $22 per year, you'll be receiving exclusive invitations to our events and also free copies of 4 editions of IPA reviews.
Very cool. See you guys next week.
See ya.
Bye.